My name is Keith Beavers, and I love Dune as a thing when I read as a kid. But the one thing that always kind of got me is all these crazy names like Bene Gesserit and then Paul? What's going on, wine lovers from the Vine Pair Podcasting Network? This is the Wine 101 Podcast. My name is Keith Beavers, and I'm the Tastings Director of Vine Pair. Oops, my hillbilly came out. Today, we're going to talk about some like champagne secrets. It's actually not a secret at all. But if you don't know about it, and then you know about it, you're like, oh, this is fun. So champagne, wine lovers, what a unique thing. You know, you have fortified wines like sherry, port, different kinds of dessert wines, if you will, like noble rot. These are wines that take viniculture and viticulture to a new level. Not just crushing grapes and making wine. There are other processes involved to create something, you know, unique and different. And champagne wasn't unique and different because there's sparkling wine all over the place. But again, like I said, like where this place is in human history allowed it to do what it did. And as the success of champagne hit a fevered pitch and infrastructure is built around this industry, you just realize like this is yet another story of happy accidents with bubbles just exploding bottles and then the British going, well, we like that fizz, and then all of a sudden the champagne wall like, okay, well, this is what we're doing, and they created something special within the sparkling wine category. Something focused, something nerdy, if you will, something like scientific, even though science was still in its nascent whatever back in the day. I just find it fascinating. And as this thing builds and builds and builds, it's inevitable that cooperatives would pop up. The wine is popular. Everybody wants to make the wine. Not everybody has the facility to do so. And so cooperatives provide just that. The problem with cooperatives in Europe in general before the EU was established is that they weren't always kept up well, meaning that equipment would break down and no new equipment would come around. New equipment would be invented and no new equipment would be installed. It was the EU that came around and subsidized cooperatives. And that's why today cooperatives are so much more successful and the quality from cooperatives is so much higher. Cooperatives in the Champagne region were established or were being founded just before the First World War. And after that, through the 1960s and 70s and 80s, more and more cooperatives were established so that by 1989, there were 140 cooperatives in Champagne. It's a lot of cooperatives. And if you think about it, by 2007, when sales peaked in Champagne for the first time at 340 million bottles, cooperatives had to have a part in that. And the major markets are the US, Belgium, Britain, Japan, and Switzerland. But this is the thing about Champagne, wine lovers, is the French market consumes or has traditionally and historically consumed more champagne than all export markets and accounts for 2/3 of the sales of champagne. Interesting. What else is interesting is that the dominant brands that we know in the United States are less dominant on the domestic market, yet account for 90% of the sales of champagne. So what that means is there is a domestic industry that's just outside of the bigger brands. Now, the bigger brands are still in Champagne. Don't get me wrong. But when you're in Champagne and you're in Reims, you're when you look on wine lists, it's like going to a local wine region. And it's like when you go to Napa and you're in a little restaurant in somewhere in Napa and you look at the wine list and you're like, oh, I don't recognize all these Cabernet Sauvignons, but they're all from Napa. Kind of the same thing. And on the domestic market in Champagne, nearly half of the total sales are made by growers, co-ops, co-op unions, which are just unionized co-ops. And it's the presence of these co-ops that kind of didn't force larger brands, but it compelled larger brands to group with each other. Moët Chandon absorbed Mercier and Ruinart, and then Veuve and Krug. These are the big houses. And then eventually under LVMH. And this is where, when I'm talking about how fascinating Champagne is and how these certain, you know, unique wine regions create their own sort of infrastructure, you know, you have the CVIC, which is a really important part of Champagne in that it helps regulate, not prices anymore, but harvest dates, and just make sure it's kind of a quality control situation going on with the CVIC. And it's great because it still has representation by the merchants and the growers and the houses. And they have negotiating power within the CVIC. But the whole reason why that even exists is because the co-ops entered the chat. And this also creates a little bit of confusion on the consumer market because it's almost a complicated maze of different sources of grapes and wine. So what's really cool is the Champagne region has created a code system that's actually on the wine label that you as a consumer can check to see how the wine was made and where it came from. Now, the thing is, I'm going to go through these and they're very cool. And it's kind of fun to look at a Champagne bottle and see this code or these codes. It doesn't necessarily mean quality because no matter what, the quality of wine is based off of who makes the wine and what their decisions are and where the grapes come from and all that. So this is just a really fun little indication of stuff. Because the thing is, the grower phenomenon that kind of took sommeliers by storm years ago, where people started drinking really cool wines made from people that did not have their own big house, that were just like called growers, and they made all their wine in-house, and they were somehow better than everybody else's Champagne, which is not necessarily true. It's just kind of a new way of understanding Champagne. And what's interesting about the grower thing is it's just like every other wine region. We have all these winemakers making their own wine, and the growers are just those people. But the thing is, the grower thing can be complicated as well. And when we go through these codes, you're going to see that somewhere in very small print on a Champagne wine label is a series of numbers with two letters before that series of numbers. The series of numbers is the registration. The two letters before that is a code. It's hard to see. Get your glasses on, and there are different places on the label, sometimes on the side, sometimes the bottom, sometimes underneath the alcohol percentage. So they're there. You're going to see it. It's going to be NM, RM, CM, RC, MA, or SR, and very rare, straight up just R. These are the codes you're going to see, and they have very clear indications as to what they mean once you know. Let's get into it. The one you're going to see most often is NM, Négociant Manipulant. These are the big brands that you know. They buy grapes from across the Champagne region. They also own their own vineyards, and these are, like I said, brands you can recognize anywhere in the world. If you see an RM next to the registration number, this one means récoltant manipulant. That just means, well, récoltant means harvester. So it is this is your grower category. If you see RM, you're buying a grower Champagne. They grow their own grapes. They make their own wine. And actually with this code, they have to, by law, make wine on their estate. The grapes, the harvesting, the winemaking, the bottling, everything has to happen on the estate. No co-ops involved. This is what sommeliers affectionately call farmer fizz. Get it? And just so we all know, a huge amount of this farmer fizz grower champagne is sold and consumed within the domestic market. We really don't see a lot of this wine coming onto the American market. It is there. And this is why sommeliers love it so much, is because it's such a unique thing that they're able to grab these domestically mostly sold wines and put them onto wine lists here in the States. That's kind of the draw. And the quality, of course, which is depending on the winemaker. If you see the letters CM next to the registration number, that means Coopérative de Manipulation, which just means that's a co-op. It's co-op wine. They have their own label. Done. If you see an RC next to the registration code, it means Récoltante Coopérateur. This is a label that is owned and organized, if it's a line of wines, by a single grower, but the wine is produced in a cooperative facility, and the cooperative has its own winemaker. So the grower or the récoltante or harvester doesn't have a big hand in how the wine is made because of the in-house winemaker. Basically, this is I need you to make my wine for me because I don't have a facility kind of deal. So those are two grower categories with different, you know, ways of making the wine. And there's a third one. If you see SR next to the number, that is Société du Récoltante. And this means it's an entity or organization that is set up by two or more growers. Sometimes it's a large group of growers to share one winery to make and sell wine under this organization's label. So there's no cooperative here. It's like a business partnership where everybody gets together and buys a winery, let's say, and they all feed their varieties into it like a cooperative, but they are a business who own and control everything. That's kind of, or like one person has a winery and says, hey, let's all get in on this together. We're going to name this champagne, and then it's going to all be distributed under this label. Who wants to come with me type of situation? So that's a lot. There's a lot of information in these little codes, NM, RM, CM, RC, SR. That's really cool. There are two that you don't see a lot of, but I'm going to mention it anyway, just in case you're in Champagne and you're looking at, like, let's say you're in Reims and you're in a little wine shop and you're looking at the labels and you're like, oh, look, what's that mean? What's the R mean? What does the MA mean? There is MA, which means Marquis d'Acheteur. D'Acheteur just means a buyer. So this is the buyer's own brand. And then just R, Récoltante, means harvester. It means a small family of growers. So you can see that just like any wine region, Champagne has its own vibrant structural industry within its boundaries. And the majority that we enjoy are from the people or the larger companies that can do the distribution in the chaos of the three-tier system of the United States. There are growers that have the money and ways to do so. But when you're in Champagne, like wine lovers, if you ever get a chance, if you're in Paris, you can get the champagne pretty quickly. It's amazing. Just going to Reims and seeing the cathedral where French history happened. The first king of France was coronated and baptized there. Maybe not coronated, but definitely baptized there. And it's immense. And when you go walking around this beautiful town, and you go to these little restaurants, the wine lists are the local wines. They just happen to be champagne. And you're going to see the big ones, but you're also going to see a lot of champagne you just don't recognize. But the beauty of it is it's all pretty damn good. I went to a really cool little sort of joint in Reims one night on the recommendation of VinePair CEO Adam Teeter called the Glue Pot. And I had one of the most delicious burgers I've ever had in Europe with a few glasses of a grower's champagne that I cannot remember the name of. And that's okay, because I don't think I would find that champagne outside of Reims or outside of France. And it was a special moment. It's kind of great when you're in Champagne and you're just bopping around and drinking the local wines. It's cool. But the presence of these large brands, I say brands, but these are the giants that pioneered what everybody else can do now. The growers and the relationship with these houses, was almost a symbiotic. I know there were riots and it was rough, but it became a bit of a symbiotic relationship once the CVIC was developed. And we can never forget how Champagne got to where it is today. And it's people like Veuve Clicquot, Ruinart, Moët Chandon, and Krug that got us to where Champagne is today with their uniqueness, their innovations, and everything like that. So we can never, ever forget that. But that's what Champagne is. It's a complicated, delicious, bubbly industry that has a very intense, regulated infrastructure that allows us to enjoy that quality. Whew, that's nuts. I love it. And I know not everyone's going to go out and find grower champagne, but these little codes will help you out. If you're in a place in the United States that has a big distribution system like New York, Seattle, maybe even Pittsburgh or San Francisco, and that's where you're going to find these small shops or wine lists that have the grower champagne, and they're great. But just like any other wine, may not all be within your preference point, which is you have to talk to the sommelier. You have to talk to the wine merchant. You have to explain what things you like and don't like about champagne, because the champagne itself, this wine, it can be clean and lean. It can be big and brioche. It can be somewhere in between. There's a lot of styles going on here. It can be oxidized a little bit. It can be, there's all those different styles. It just requires a little conversation with the people you're buying the wine from, because let's be honest here, as beautiful as champagne is, it is expensive. I mean, a non-vintage champagne from a big brand starts at like $50, and it only goes up from there, which is why we as a society, our drinking culture, have always seen it as a celebratory thing. There's other reasons, but that price point is like, okay, I'm going to buy this, but I'm going to do something special if I'm buying this much. I'm going to spend this much on a wine. You know, just like when you're buying a bottle of Barolo, Napa Cab, some expensive stuff like that, champagne's on that level. Now, the thing is, wine lovers, next week, I'm going to do a little in-depth champagne discussion about where the grapes come from, the different regions of champagne and all that. But bear with me, because a champagne historian has reached out to me and wants to talk about some historical stuff in champagne that I think you guys will love. So I'm going to get that interview going. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about the Champagne region itself. And the week after that, I'm going to talk to this person about three very cool historical moments in Champagne for your history-loving, nerdy, wine-loving heads. All right, let's talk next week. Yeah. Fine Pair Keith is my Insta. Rate and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. It really helps get the word out there. And now for some totally awesome credits. Wine 101 was produced, recorded, and edited by yours truly, Keith Beavers, at the Vine Pair headquarters in New York City. I want to give a big old shout out to co-founders Adam Teeter and Josh Mallon for creating Vine Pair. And I mean, big shout out to Danielle Grinberg, the art director of Vine Pair, for creating the most awesome logo for this podcast. Also, Darby Seaside for the theme song. Listen to this. And I want to thank the entire Vine Pair staff for helping me learn something new every day. See you next week.